Chapter 22. Beginning the Church. For many successive years, I have endeavored to find new ways and means for the promotion and expansion of scientific mind healing. Mary Baker Eddy, 1878. On the 3rd of December, the grand jury of the Superior Court accepted the incredible story of James Sargent and his colleague, George Collier. To their indictment, Dr. Eddy and E.J. Ahrens said they were not guilty. Dr. Eddy's attorney was preparing the defense in great detail in order to refute totally Sargent's fabrication with facts. And at the Eddy's expense, detectives were endeavoring to get to the bottom of the malicious plot. But no doubt it was Mrs. Eddy's walking and talking with God for spiritual guidance which produced the next bit of evidence in the case. In mid-December, Dr. Eddy received the following letter. Taunton, December 16th, 1878. To Dr. Asa G. Eddy and E. J. Ahrens, feeling that you have been greatly injured by false charges and knowing there is no truth in my statements that you attempted to hire Sargent to kill Daniel Spofford, and wishing to retract as far as possible all things, I have said to your injury, I now say that there is no truth whatever in the statement that I saw you meet Sargent at East Cambridge or any other place and pay or offer to pay him any money, that I never heard a conversation between you and Sargent as testified to by me. Whether Daniel Spofford has anything to do with Sargent, I do not know. All I know is that the story I told on the stand is wholly false and was got up by Sergeant George A. Collier. In the first month of 1879, the charges against Dr. Eddy and Ahrens were dropped. The Superior Court record regarding this reads, "This indictment was thence continued to the present January term, and now the District Attorney, Oliver Stevens, Esquire, says he will prosecute this indictment no further on payments of costs, which are thereupon paid. And the said Ahrens and Eddy are thereupon discharged." January 31st, 1879. Lawyer Conwell planned to arrest and prosecute Daniel Spofford, but that was not the course that Mrs. Eddy's experience was to take. Her preaching in the Baptist Tabernacle was stimulating interest in Christian Science in Boston, and her footsteps turned in that direction. Dire as their personal situation had been, it had caused the leader to rise higher. In her words, "Abiding by the rules of metaphysics prevents any results from the attacks of the mesmerist, not beneficial even to the individual, that do not lift him higher, enlarging his power and unfolding his latent capacity to meet and master error. Metaphysics sustains and increases by use the power of truth. This fulfills the scripture, quote, they shall take up serpents," end quote. Were it not for Mrs. Eddy's pen, the charges of conspiracy to murder would have remained a blot on the name of Eddy and a total enigma to future generations. The next edition of Science and Health published the facts of the case in the chapter Demonology, which detailed Mrs. Eddy's experience with Kennedy's malpractice. She wrote of the case as one of the most diabolical conspiracies that ever disgraced the annals of history, and which we have evidence was carried on by the hidden influences employed in the foregoing plots. The state removed the aforesaid detective. The other two principal witnesses were taken to jail on previous charges. But those individuals evidently most guilty, and who, it is believed, by competent judges, instigated the plot, had sheltered themselves behind so many circumstances, and so wrought back of others in all they did, they have not yet been tried by human law, and await their sentence from a higher tribunal. In the first edition of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy had written, "The mistake the disciples of Jesus made to found religious organizations and church rites, if indeed they did this, was one the Master did not make. No time was lost by our Master in organizations, rites, and ceremonies, or in proselytizing for certain forms of belief. We have no record that forms of church worship were instituted by our great spiritual teacher, Jesus of Nazareth, and we learn the improbability of this in the science of God that he taught and demonstrated." Mary had learned through bitter experience, in endeavoring to give her wonderful discovery to the world, that only the Christian consciousness was prepared to use rather than abuse or misuse the wonderful science of being. For over 12 years, she had worked diligently to present her marvelous message with little assistance and much hindrance from pulpit and press. In the second edition of Science and Health, she had written, "We have not a newspaper at our command through which to right the wrongs and answer the untruths. We have not a pulpit from which to explain how Christianity heals the sick. But if we had either of these, the slanderer and the physician would have less to do, and we should have more. Christ's church does not require organization, but the students did. So they had formed the Christian Scientists Association. This was a help to their growth, but it was restricted to Mrs. Eddy's students, and she needed a broader platform from which to proclaim her message to humanity." The series of meetings in the Baptist Church in Boston had been most gratifying. On the 24th of January, shortly before they terminated, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Clara Choate, quote, "I have lectured in parlors 14 years. God calls me now to go before the people in a wider sense," end quote. Though she had been lecturing for many years, the era of her preaching began in the Baptist Tabernacle in the fall of 1878. In February, the scientists arranged for a room in the Parker Memorial Building on Berkeley Street in Boston, and Mrs. Eddy continued to preach each Sunday. On the 12th of April, the Christian Scientist Association recorded, quote, "On motion of Mrs. M.B. Glover Eddy, it was seconded and unanimously voted that we organize a church to be called Church of Christ," end quote. But in the spring of 1879, Mr. and Mrs. Eddy were the church, commuting every Sunday to Boston to hold services. A young man who was attracted to these meetings described them as follows. While Mrs. Eddy, the eloquent, earnest pleader for her infant cause, was the chief object of interest, it was the gentle yet evidently strong nature of Asa Gilbert Eddy which formed a necessary background and seemed to make the meetings altogether complete. This young man, Arthur True Buswell, and a friend, James Ackland, roomed with the Eddies in Lynn while they studied in Mrs. Eddy's class that summer. Neither was able to pay even a third of his tuition, and the class of two was little smaller than average size during these years of intense persecution. Size meant nothing to Mrs. Eddy. As she later wrote, quote, "A small group of wise thinkers is better than a wilderness of dullards and stronger than the might of empires," end quote. She had two intelligent, earnest pupils who were learning under her tutelage to be wise thinkers. Both students were deeply impressed with the spiritual unity expressed by the Eddies' marriage. Their companionship and cheerful cooperation were doubly evident in this summer of 1879, for all of the domestic chores, as well as the work for the cause, fell upon their shoulders. By the time the charter for the church was obtained in August, these two new students were deeply imbued with Mrs. Eddy's spiritual teaching and eager to practice their newfound truths. The first directors of the Church of Christ Scientist, which was to be established in Boston, were Mrs. Eddy, Edward A. Orne, James Ackland, and Arthur T. Buswell. Mrs. Eddy's church, however, was not a material organization to be established in Boston or any other city. Her church was the structure of truth and love, to be builded in individual consciousness. Every student whose thoughts were resting upon and proceeding from divine principle was a missionary for her church. Every practitioner of Christian Science was a pillar in the temple of our God, and her church was to embrace every city on earth until all the globe manifested New Jerusalem.